All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Beauty and the Beast Physical Therapy and Strength Conditioning Podcast. After a couple week hiatus, I am back with my co-host, Dr. Ross Childs.
Happy Thursday, everyone. It'll probably be Friday by the time you hear this. Hope everyone's been enjoying the super hot weather we had, which seems like a millennium ago, and now it's led into winter again. So not enough sunshine for me, Adam, so if I'm a little off today, plus having to argue with Best Buy, you'll see why I have the Debbie Downer outcome. How's everything been with you?
Pretty good, pretty good.
You've been busy lately.
Yeah, it feels like I've been going nuts the last couple weeks, trying to get stuff going, get stuff ready, all that kind of good stuff. So
isn't entrepreneurship and being a business owner oh so fun?
Yeah, it's great. I just wish that this, and maybe this, you know, I'm fairly new to this game. Maybe, you know, everybody who hears this will be like, no, that never goes away. I just would like to, for a few weeks, feel like I'm in a groove and not drinking from a fire hose. But that might be a little too much to expect at this point. But
well, especially where you're working in the business and on the business. I don't know if you're ever going to feel like you're in a comfortable groove. Because yeah, once you're working in it is in a groove, then you're realizing you have to work more on it. And then if you're working on it comes into a groove, you realize you're not working in it.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's a lot of the struggle for us because we're everything to the company right now. You know, CEO, president, CFO,
or
maintenance and services, whatever you choose to call it. So it's challenging at this time.
What's the CTO, chief technological officer?
Yeah.
Is that what, I don't know what the acronym is, but yeah, whoever has to deal with all the technology crap.
Yeah, and that's when I usually call Best Buy and they just keep dicking me around. So let's not even get into that topic.
Yeah.
But today, guys, we're going to talk about exercise-based injury prevention for just knee injuries and specifically ACLs, because a lot of it comes down to be the same thing. ACL injuries are very prevalent in sports, and 70% of ACL injuries are non-contact by nature. So really, it's what we do for our training can minimize the risk of ACL injuries. We can never have that risk at 0%. But hopefully, we can help you guys understand what you can do to build better, stronger knees and minimize the risk of ligament injuries, meniscus injuries, whatever it may be. So what this podcast is not today is a rehab-based module for ACL recovery or reconstructions. So we're talking the individual would be, you know, potentially 12 to 16 weeks out or cleared by their orthopedic surgeon to do higher level activities, whether that's return to participate. So we're assuming there's a certain function first if someone's post-surgical. Now, similar to the last couple of podcasts that we had, we've based a lot of our knowledge off of the clinical practice guidelines that come out through the Physical Therapy Association. So this one's been put out by the Journal of Sports Physical Therapy. And that's one of the ones that I'll read the most. And this just came out in January of 2023, so this is kind of hot off the press. And they go through these clinical practice guidelines, they look at all the research, and then they grade the research and provide recommendations for us, which they grade A through F. So this one was pretty good, where most of the grades that we'll talk about today are going to be A's and B's. And really just one of them was below a B, and we'll certainly get into that. So really, this is where Adam's going to shine through, because a lot of this is about strength and conditioning and agility and injury prevention. So prehab, if we choose to call it that. So yeah, we'll get started there. Now, everyone knows the importance of injury prevention in general, but especially for the ACL, it is strongly recommended that we try to prevent it as much as possible. Now, as I said before, we can never make risk zero, but we can reduce it as much as possible. So there are some injury prevention programs out there that have shown to have great efficacy. One's called the Santa Monica program. The other one's called the Cincinnati Sports Medicine. There's also the FIFA 11 Plus, which has countless research to prove that it reduces the injury risk by a significant amount. And I've seen as much as 40 to 50% throughout the season. Adam, this question's for you. Based on what you know about sports, based on your experience as an athlete, what are the components that would make a well-directed and well-developed knee injury program?
Strength of the joint and stability of all the surrounding structures.
Okay.
If you want to.
That's all right. So why don't you delve into the specifics of that a little bit more? What's the function of the knee when you think about, I want to give this exercise because it's going to help with X? And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to say, oh, split squats for this, but, you know, like quad strengthening for. So if you don't mind taking a minute to just go over that.
Yeah, so the first one, like you said, is just straight up quad strength and strengthening that joint. So being able to control the forces to, you know, explode, to react, to change direction, and be able to keep the knee in a stable position. Because at its base, basically those different ligaments are relatively, I'm putting that in quotes, but they're the only real structures that anchor your femur to your tibia, right?
Yep.
To your tibia. So your upper leg to your lower leg. That, like, the other ones are indirectly related. They anchor them, but those are the only ones that are, like, set anchors that attach one to the other. So if those are put under too much tension or too much strain, that's what happens, and that's why they tear.
Yep.
Because the muscle doesn't support the joint and can't offset the forces of stopping, changing directions, cutting. So the first one is that quad strength, being able to, you know, again, support the joint. The second one after that is stability, usually with the posterior chain muscles, because those help support deceleration where a lot of ACL injuries occur. So hamstrings are the big one, and then glutes, because glutes are essentially the rotator cuff of the hip. They keep everything stable, and then the hamstrings go from there. I mean, that's why the hamstrings are such a big part of ACL recovery.
Yeah.
Is because essentially the hamstring does sort of what the ACL does.
They work together.
Right. It pulls the lower bone back. It's essentially a knee decelerator. So when your leg wants to keep going forward, when you're trying to slow, your hamstring is what pulls it back and keeps it from sliding too far. Which is how people can get away with not having a repaired ACL, not for necessarily like big cutting movements, but if X person doesn't want to have the surgery to get an ACL repair, they can do fine without an ACL doing normal activity.
Sure.
If they follow a good enough recovery protocol.
Yep, absolutely. And based on all that information, again, when we look at the grades, everything that you really described, they've rated it that all of those components, strength, posterior chain strengthening, endurance, the agility, the quick explosiveness, again, all graded as an A. So all the research proves that we need to have a well-faceted program. Now, if someone does a prevention program, what typically do they focus on? And I can't give too much other information because it just gives you the answer.
So typically in prevention, so prior to, it's about strength training, all-around strength. I mean, one of the most lopsided statistics I've heard in any of the, and Grant, I'll go into more detail than this because this is fairly general, but is that for young females specifically, strength training can cut your risk of an ACL injury by as much as 80%.
Yep.
Multiple studies have shown that it is that high. I honestly cannot think of another statistic that is that overwhelmingly supportive of a certain protocol. Like, I've never heard of anything that, you know, doing this makes an 80% difference.
No.
That's huge.
I mean, even if someone told me 40%, that's a huge
right,
percentage.
Right, that's a huge number. Never mind 80.
Yeah.
So, so the strength based. But then on top of that, how can you control forces? So that's, again, the posterior chain, I'm going to be honest, I kind of got off track there. Can you ask me the question one more time?
If someone does an injury prevention program, where do you feel like it's lacking? Just your general injury prevention program for the knee. What do most people think of when they think ACL prevention programs? Where does their focus lie?
Quads.
Yeah.
The entire front side of their body. Because we've talked about it before, when people talk about running, sprinting, jumping, they think of quad because that's the explosive muscle. That is the muscle that straightens the leg as fast as possible.
Yeah.
So that you take off.
Yeah.
So that's where people will go to try and strengthen. But it's really a pretty small piece of the puzzle in the grand scheme of things, because that's all out strength.
Yeah.
But it is not as much stability and control. Obviously, there's some of that in there.
Yeah.
But the stability and control comes more from the posterior chain and the lateral muscles and movement patterns and all that sort of stuff than it does from just straight up quad strength and box jumps.
Yep.
And things like that.
Well, the reason I asked that is because even in the article that we're reading, it even suggests that we should never put all of our eggs in one basket.
Yep.
So it even said, really, it's graded as a C. The evidence just doesn't show it. So if you only go the route of strengthening one muscle group, it's not going to help you. If you're only doing agility exercises, it's not going to help you. So you really touched upon it with that first question, that it really needs to be well-rounded. The biggest mistake I find is that then people tend to put too much emphasis on it, and then all of a sudden they can't do their strengthening exercises because they worry too much about neuromuscular reeducation. And then all of a sudden they can't do their neuromuscular reeducation because they have to worry about single leg balance drills. So, you know, then it's just figuring out, okay, how do we periodize this over the course of 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, whatever it may be at that point. Now, you talked about young females. In general, how young should athletes start using an injury prevention program?
I mean, the age that I've always heard is like 12 is early. Well, I mean, in terms of strength training. I mean, movement mechanic training, things like that. And by movement mechanic, I mean like, you know, when kids go to a place and they just learn to move.
You
know, they do stuff that to the parents may seem goofy, but it's basically just them being taught how to move well.
Yeah.
But in terms of weight, plyometric, that kind of thing, the younger side, I've always heard and worked off the opinion of is like 12, 13, and then
sure.
up through there. But so, yeah, usually I'd say 13 is probably the best place to really start to focus on that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when they start hitting growth spurts. That's when, you know, that those chances become more and more, or increase more and more based on what's going on with their body at that time.
Yeah. So typically we know that females are at a greater risk for ACL injuries. And it says the highest rate of injury between a certain age group is 15 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the earlier we can get them started, I think the better. But we have to remember that that doesn't necessarily mean that when they start working out, they go right to an injury prevention program, because any well-designed program is inherently injury prevention.
Exactly.
So we need to recognize that it doesn't necessarily have to be two separate things, which is where most people go when they think about it. They think, no, I have my strength and conditioning program, and then I have my injury prevention program, and I'm working out 72 days a week now. All right, well, that too puts you at risk, because now you're never allowed to heal. We talked about younger people and injury prevention. You know, all this can be used just for healthy knees. It doesn't necessarily mean just injury prevention, but to remain strong, that's fine. Can someone who's not that 15 to 18 year old, in your opinion, benefit from the same type of program?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, without even having any hesitation, absolutely.
I almost answered before you finished the question,
yeah,
but I wasn't sure if you were going to throw something in at the end.
Which is always possible. So a lot of people, especially those who have healthy knees or say they do, they need to start thinking in multiple planes. So how does the body go front to back, side to side? How do we resist motions? How do we create motions? Jumping, decelerating, accelerating, running, sprinting, jogging, hopping. Those are all natural motions that we do. You know, think about kids in play. It's all those things. You know, luckily they're pliable and gumby enough that they're not going to rip anything. But we should be doing that into our 30s and 40s and 50s. And if someone is in their 60s and has quote unquote bad knees, there's absolutely no reason why we can't scale the exercises to create a stronger knee, but also prevent the knee from getting worse. So the concepts don't really change. I may not do as much plyometrics as they start getting into their 60s and 70s, but am I going to make the muscles stronger around it by doing sled pushes, sled pulls, some type of step-up variation, squats, sidesteps. Yeah, you bet your ass I am.
And I think that people, again, you were talking about like a prevention program versus a strength and conditioning program. I think that people don't quite realize that when you talk about plyometrics versus strength training versus power versus, I mean, granted, plyometrics are power, whatever. Your ability to move quickly, assuming that you're not, you know, some high-level athlete that's been doing it forever.
Yeah.
Your ability to move quickly and accept forces and create power is going to be better when you strength train.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning, middle, end. So if you are somebody that can't necessarily, if you are an older individual who maybe hasn't really done much organized training or just, you know, played sports in college, but it's been 35 years and they haven't really done a lot, just building a strength conditioning program, a strength program will allow you to do better with fast, quick movements, with just inherently because your body, your muscles are stronger so they can carry that force and you're more mechanically able to create that force. Now, are you going to be as fast and explosive as if you did plyos? No. But if we're talking about going from no ability to create or express power to a strength training protocol, that ability is going to jump with the strength training protocol, even if you're not doing plyometrics.
Correct. Now, one of the bigger mistakes that I find that most people do, and this is not even about younger athletes because, again, they're more resilient, but look at like the, we'll say the older male, 40 plus, that says, you know what? I don't really work out, but I'm going to go play basketball. You know, I'm in a men's league. I don't really warm up. So instantly that increases the risk of tendon rupture significantly. I don't even want to say tenfold, probably higher than that. So this is a case where we take someone who's not physically active to begin with, they're not doing any type of training, and then they decide that they're going to start running up and down the basketball court, jumping, twisting, and quad tendons and Achilles seem to be the two most common ones that are going to tear. Should those individuals be strength training?
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not even
1-2 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, because right away, that's going to increase the tensile load through the tendon, which is going to help create a stronger muscle force, which, again, is going to express more motion. And I just... It's hard for me to think of a lifestyle without working out, without strength training for that matter. I can't imagine what it would feel like just to jump into an activity and not do that. Or let's take you with soccer, for example. I've seen plenty of times where you're out here doing sprinting drills, agility drills, side-to-side drills, which those are important. I've seen you dribbling the ball out there. That's why I called you Sweet Feet. but you're still implementing that through. Just imagine what the average person can do if they even just practiced it one day a week.
Yeah.
I would love to see that, especially with the rate of tendon ruptures. How can we decrease that, or how much can we decrease it by just with one day of training? One. That's all it is. But I just don't understand why people don't do it. That's the frustrating part for me.
And it's funny too, because so for the last 2 weeks, just with, I've been continuing on with my, you know, in quote, like extracurriculars, you know, so two classes of jiu-jitsu that I've started doing a week, soccer game and one softball game. And I didn't strength train. I mean, I started back up this week, but the previous 2 weeks, the first week was just a crazy week. And I was like, I don't have time, but I'll make sure that I at least get the movement in by doing the, you know, the activities. And then last week, I just kind of wanted to continue to carry that through. And just for no other reason than just to kind of see how I did. First week felt pretty good. Last week, it hit me a little bit more. I got about halfway through the week, and I was, you know, I had a hard time warming up for soccer. My knees stiffened up a lot faster. Mm-hmm. You know, I could go about a week and a half, 2 weeks before I start to really notice a difference when I'm doing that more explosive stuff. So, I mean, I can't even imagine taking, like, only doing that.
And I don't know. I've just been strength training for so long that for me, it's, if I don't work out for 3 days, I feel it mentally more than anything.
Yeah, I'd say there were a few days I had to like emotionally, go out for a couple extra walks.
Yeah, and I feel it more emotionally than probably physically. I know if I work out too much, I feel it more physically than emotionally. But
yes,
everyone, we need to be practicing essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, you would never tell your kids just to go to a game.
Right.
So, but yet as adults, we think it's going to produce a different outcome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just absolutely ridiculous. If you had an athlete or an older adult or just your everyday weekend warrior, and they said, I'm going to start strength and conditioning, but also I'm going to incorporate my injury prevention program, whatever that may be. We don't need specifics on it. What's an appropriate frequency and dosage that you recommend?
They're going from nothing. I always like about 3 days a week. Strictly strength training. I mean, you know, I don't mean 3 hours of, 3 days of 2 hour workouts, you know, where you go for a run and then you lift and then you do your plyos and then, and that's a terrible order, by the way. Let me just point that out. But I'm talking like 45 minutes to an hour of strength training. If you're somebody that's just like, I haven't done this in years, my knees have been sore, I'm trying to make it so that my knees don't hurt when I pick your activity, basketball, soccer,
yeah,
whatever. I always like 3 days a week. 2 days a week is fine too. I mean, even 1 day a week is going to make a huge difference. So
anything, as long as you're consistent with
right,
that one
exactly.
Day.
Once I start getting up into, you know, 4 days a week, 5 days a week, I have specialized situations. There are some people that, you know, they don't have time to do an hour-long workout. Their life is just crazy. So, you know, they work out 5 days a week, but it's only, you know, like one superset Monday, one superset Tuesday,
sure,
the two exercises back-to-back for maybe a couple extra sets. And so it is the amount in terms of volume of 3 days of 45 minutes to an hour of strength training. It's just split up over a longer period of time.
So I'm glad you brought up that last part about volume. So they're suggesting we should have 2 to 3 times a week at a minimum. Those that do it consistently for 2 to 3 days a week reduce the likelihood of a knee injury. How long per week, or we'll just say per session? Let's say we're doing 3 sessions a week.
Mm-hmm.
What's the minimum dosage in that one session that we would start seeing the benefit?
In terms of time?
Yep.
So, I mean, 20, 30 minutes?
That's it.
You know?
It's all we need. And that's what the research papers are all showing. So it's not like we need to spend a ton of time.
No.
So even in the case that someone did want to have a strength program and then a separate ACL prevention program, you could add 10 minutes at the beginning,
right,
and just do it that way. But we don't need, you know, a Monday strength day, a Tuesday prevention day.
Right.
It's all going to be the same thing. So 2 to 3 days a week, I think, are ideal. And you could have a well-rounded program put together between dynamic warm-up, your injury prevention, if you want to call it that, your strengthening. And that's what a lot of these programs, like the Santa Monica program, the Cincinnati Sports Medicine, and FIFA 11, there are a couple more of them out in Europe that I'm not as familiar with, but it, from start to finish, they spell it out for you. You know, it's foam roll, active warm-up, they tell you exactly what to do.
Yep.
And in the case like Cincinnati Sports Medicine, they're very specific with their jump protocol. The Santa Monica program kind of leaves it open a little bit more, where it's, okay, we're going to start with our plyometric exercises. Okay, now we're going to go strength exercises. Now we're going to go isolation exercises. Now we're going to do stretching exercises. So they really lay it out there. So that's what I like about that. And again, for the average person, that's all they really need.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone were to come to me and say, would you do this program as a standalone program just for health? Sure, why not? It's all encompassing, and that's what we want. Now, how long should someone do this type of a program for before they really start seeing results? What's the shortest period of time you'll tell them that they need to stay on it for?
I mean, to see real, are we talking prevention now, or are we talking recovery? I guess it doesn't necessarily matter.
Yeah,
but
one and the same.
I mean, before they start to see results, or like specifics, I'd probably say like what, 6 to 8 weeks?
6 weeks.
Yeah. In terms of prevention, forever.
Yeah, forever. No, but 6 weeks, they said as little as 6 weeks are really all that needed. Again, as long as we're hitting that threshold
right.
of the multiple times a week at 30 minutes and we're being consistent and compliant with it. So it's really not a long period of time that we need to be on it. Now, the hard part is, of course, after those 6 weeks are over, hopefully you're then implementing it throughout the season, because just because the season's here doesn't mean you need to abandon the preseason stuff. You then need to reduce the volume, need to offset the amount of stress you're placing on your body from playing, and you still need to fit in that injury prevention piece.
I really wish that you could throw away three quarters of the things that we've talked about. I wish that would make it through to coaches, to athletes, this to me is one of the most frustrating things about working with athletes. Not the athletes themselves, but dealing with, you know, I have one athlete that I've worked with for a long time, and she, you know, kind of has to stop strength training because, you know, I mean, there's classes and all that sort of stuff. There's less time, but, and then all they do is run them. All they do is run them over and over again. And then, and we've talked about this before, and then the athlete comes back to me and it's just like, you know, my shoulder's killing me. My knees have been really bad. I'm always hurt. My back is sore all the sure. time. I'm having spasms. And it's like...
Well, they've done...
shit.
They've done research exercises. This is just one specifically about hockey players in the NHL. And they showed that if you keep up with your strength training program 2 days a week, and as long as you're using 90% or above of your one rep max, mm-hmm. you can maintain 86% of your off-season strength gains throughout the season.
Yep.
86%. That's greater than anything else that I've seen, which again, that's hockey. So it may change a little bit depending on it, but we get the idea. Keep
yeah.
up with it. Now, what's interesting about that is you kind of went into the next bullet point, which was clinicians, coaches, parents, as well as the athletes, must ensure high compliance with exercise-based knee injury prevention programs, especially female athletes. So this doesn't even say off-season, preseason.
Right.
It just says must ensure high compliance. So if you're a coach and you don't have your athletes strength train in season, you are putting them at an increased likelihood of injury.
Yep.
And that's just the facts. So I think part of the issue is, one, can be scheduling, but also when you're looking at it, you know, just the running piece, we know that running is going to make them weaker.
Mm-hmm.
It may build up their cardiorespiratory fitness, but it does nothing for the expression of power, strength, blah, 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 whatever it is. What sport does this athlete play that you were describing?
Lacrosse.
And they only run them, like endurance running or
sprinting? I mean, you know, I'm not in as, but from everything I can tell, the strength portion of it is lacking or non-existent.
And that's just a case where there's probably a lack of knowledge
yeah.
on someone's part.
Yeah.
You know, I won't start to point any fingers, but especially if the coach is more of the old school, they don't really know better. Yeah. So they were taught the way that they trained or someone taught them. But we have to, and fortunately for a lot of schools, especially bigger schools, D1 schools, you wouldn't have to worry about this. They have strength and conditioning coaches. They have directors of sports performance and sports medicine that take care of this so that coaches don't even have to worry about it. They basically just say, oh, it's 3:30. They should be in the weight room right now. But for not everyone has that luxury. So athletes need to be their own advocates. You know, and they need to understand that just playing a sport only makes you good at your sport.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with injury prevention. So practicing your sport and playing your sport and strength training to make your tissue more resilient for that sport is kind of the best recipe. And it's pretty friggin' easy.
Yeah.
We don't have to, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel here. It's literally not rocket science, but it's so underutilized, you know, or it just chaps my ass when it's like, all right, you're going to put in 6 months worth of strength training and then you're just going to let it fall to the wayside.
Yeah.
Like, it does not make sense. Even there's research showing to maintain all you have to do is work out once every 10 days at a high enough intensity.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why would you not do that?
Yeah.
It just, oh, man. I just don't understand it. But again, not a lot of people understand why we do what we do. So, now, what's your focus or what are your thoughts on athletes only doing balance exercises for quote-unquote prevention?
I mean, it's a piece of the puzzle. I mean, are you talking balance exercises in terms of like split squats, single leg deadlifts, and things
like
that? Or
like
just like single leg stance?
Single leg stance, air X, Bosu ball.
I think a higher percentage for a higher level athlete is acceptable. I mean, you know, I've seen things on, the one that always comes to mind is like Alvin Kamara from the New Orleans Saints. They did I saw a big thing about how a lot of his training is stability, and I would say it's past balance. It's almost like dynamic balance training. You know, there's a lot of stuff about
dynamic, reactive.
Right,
like
exactly.
That.
And it's partially because, you know, these guys have to be balanced, they have to be quick, they have to be agile, and they've been strength training since they
forever.
Were. Yeah, forever. So they need a very small amount of strength training to keep what they have, and you know, within reason, but and they can implore some of these other things that are going to be more specific to their particular position,
sure,
skill set, whatever it may be. And it also increases the decreases the loading on the tissue, so they're more able to recover. And when it comes to football, like, you got to be able to recover well.
Correct.
Just because of how violent and fast the game is. But for the younger athlete that doesn't have 5, 10, 15, 20 years of weightlifting experience behind them and all that tissue resiliency built up, it's a piece of the puzzle, but it's a much smaller piece of the puzzle, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. It starts with strength first, then you build up power, agility, reactive balance, dynamic balance. You know, you have to have a well-thought-out program. And unfortunately, too many people have been led to believe that single-leg balance is the missing component. It's a component, mm-hmm, but is not the only component. Now, one thing that we often neglect to talk about, too, is kind of what happens in the future if we don't do X or if we do Y. So what the research also shows is that these injury prevention programs also will help prevent or at least delay the onset of osteoarthritis, which is more prevalent, especially in those that have had ACL injuries. It also prevents or delays knee replacements. So that's huge. You know, I'm to the point with people where it's whatever ability you have, you better use it. Because if you don't, then that's going to cause those changes. Now, we know traumatic arthritis is a real thing. So if you damage your knee when you're 15, that's going to come back to haunt you down the road. So you better make sure you're maintaining it as well as you can. But now, if we keep up with these exercises, it's also telling me that I am going to give myself the best opportunity to prevent that degeneration in my knee, which then pushes me off from a knee replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So we're reducing medical costs over the long term as well. So and that I think is a missing component, because I read a statistic that from the initial injury to the last day that someone is discharged from ACL reconstruction.
Oh God, I can't wait to hear this.
The cost is between $50,000 and $75,000. Which, again, that's on average.
Yeah,
so,
yeah,
you know, that could potentially be even more. Now, of course, if it's a, you know, professional athlete, it's getting paid for by the team.
Well, right.
But for the average individual that you and I would work with. So now you got to think, you paid $75,000 to have this knee rehabbed back to where it needs to be. And then, you know, let's say 20 years later, you start getting patellofemoral, you know, fibroarthrosis. So you got to get that taken care of, cleaned out. And then because you can't move your knee as much, now it creates degeneration in both of the compartments. So now you got to get injections. And then you've worn out your welcome with the injections. You can't work out as much, so you can't strengthen it. Your last option is a knee replacement. So I would just like to give myself the best opportunity to keep my own parts. That's the important part. So even what we just talked about, you know, so preventing future medical costs and other things from happening, or reducing future medical costs, all the evidence proves that, yes, this is rated as an A. This is a great recommendation for us to prevent something from happening down the road, something other than kind of these ligamentous injuries, and we can actually save money in the process. They're also finding out, too, that we're reducing that risk of injury in the knee, which is also then going to allow for improved health and wellness down the road as well. Because typically when we get injured, we typically go back a little bit, meaning that we're taking a step back, we're not pushing ourselves as hard, so we're also having improved health outcomes, which is also a big push as to why I'm okay sometimes not pushing myself as hard, because the more risk I have, the more likely that I'm going to get injured, then I'm not going to want to push myself as hard. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword on that one. But the important part with this is, if your risk of a knee injury is already high, which we know females are at a higher risk, and especially with ground sports, mm-hmm. specifically that have a lot of twisting, stopping, decelerating, you need to have the right people in your corner to be able to say, this is what you need to focus on. As long as you are consistent with those programs, it prevents the likelihood of a knee injury from occurring. But again, the probability that it never happens is, it's never zero, but it can be quite low. And that's, you know, that's why it's never, well, it's not impossible, it's just improbable. So, and people need to recognize that.
Yeah, and I think that's another, it's another important reason why working with a professional that, like a, you know, a strength and conditioning coach or something that, that knows what they're doing with these can be so, I mean, for lack of a more, I mean, to me, it's as simple as efficiency. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, you need to have good balance, you need to have good stability, and you need to have good strength. Somebody who doesn't know what they're doing, that may be 3, 4, 5 yeah. different exercises. To me, that's a single leg deadlift.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So like,
well, and there's a guy on Instagram. His name's Wesley Wang, and he was actually a graduate of the Franklin Pierce Physical Therapy Program. He actually graduated 1 year before I started teaching there, so it was kind of, I missed him as a student, but I also missed him as an educator. He's all over Instagram, and he's kind of like the ACL expert. Mm-hmm. So if you ever get a chance, I forget the name of his company, but Wesley Wang, he has some very, very interesting exercises that just make sense.
Yep.
Pretty cool stuff, and he's kind of revolutionizing what ACL reconstruction rehab should look like, but also prevention. And it's fun. He makes it fun for the athletes, but yep. when you see him doing these things, it's like, why can't we already do these things prior to the athlete getting injured?
Right.
So for anyone who's interested in that, again, Wesley Wang, you know, it's he certainly has a lot of enthusiasm for his ACL prevention stuff. So it's pretty cool, but he does all the research on it. He does not give anyone anything that the research doesn't support it. Mm-hmm. So I usually will go to his page and see what he's up to kind of see what the current concepts are.
Yep.
Because he may be ahead of the curve, because this paper, even though it came out right now, may have been compiled research from the last 7 years. So we don't know. But he's right up to speed with it. So, all right, any other high points that you wanted to touch on for knee injury prevention or ACL prevention?
No, I think we got most of it out. I know I got my gripes out, so.
Yeah, we certainly
did. I mean,
gripes,
it sounds negative, but like what I think should be looked at differently, I guess.
Absolutely, but hopefully this highlights the importance of it, and I know we didn't get into specific exercises, but we've done that many times, mm-hmm. so there's probably not going to be anything new here that we would ever suggest.
Pretty much 90% of the stuff that we've ever talked about in any of the episodes talking about knee pain, patellofemoral syndrome, any of that stuff, pretty much applies to this.
Absolutely.
It's, well, not pretty much. It does apply to this. It's just a little bit more methodical when you're talking about recovery from an injury after, you know, post-surgical and all that stuff. There's just more layers to it, but it's all the same information.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, so you know the drill. Once we wrap it up, hopefully you took a lot out of this, or even just one little nugget of wisdom, and then apply it to your training so you can have happier and healthier knees. All of our information will be listed at the bottom, so please feel free to reach out if you have any questions, or you can look us up on the links that will be listed below. But as always, we're here because of you guys, so if you have any content that you want to hear from us, any ideas, reach out and we'll certainly put that together. But until next time, take care.
Thanks, guys.